Melachim Aleph, Perek Chav, Pasuk Tes Zayin. Okay, so if we remember where were we up to last time, we saw Ben-Hadad comes challenging Achav, right? Threatens him, and Achav is very scared, responds very submissively. Until Ben-Hadad, well, basically the two tracks. There's what the Mefarshim in general basically call the simple pshat, is that Ben-Hadad made it clear that his intent is not just to turn Achav into a vassal, but actually to come and carry off all of Israel. That was where Achav stood up and said, if so, we're going to fight until the end. According to what Chazal tell us, it was actually Ben-Hadad came and said, you're going to have to allow me to violate your Torah, to violate your Sefer Torah. You have to hand over to me the Sefer Torah. And that was where Achav suddenly changed his tone and said, right, the famous phrase, Al Yishal El Chodesh Mifateach, don't talk. Well, what Ben-Hadad told him was, there isn't enough dirt in Shomron, there isn't enough dirt in your country to support all the feet of the soldiers that I'm going to have running through there. So then Achav responded and said, Al Yishal El Chodesh Mifateach, a person who's girding himself for battle shouldn't talk like a person who's coming back from battle. We have a battle ahead of us, let's see. And the Navi comes to Achav and reassures him, don't be scared of these very great multitudes. Hashem is going to deliver him into your hands, so that you should know that Hashem is there. If you are responding piously to the challenge, which Achav was here, Hashem will be there and show you that he crowned such efforts with success. And then he's told that the war should be conducted by the youths of the ministers, which, as we saw, either meant simple, the servants of the ministers, these were not soldiers, not warriors, or the other pshat that we saw was these were hostages of foreign. It was common in ancient times that a king that ruled over other countries, in order to ensure that they wouldn't rebel against him, he would demand that each of the vassal countries send the kings of the vassal countries each send one of their sons as a hostage to live with him, so that if they rebel against him, the son will die. So whatever it is, it says the battle should be led by these youths, and Achav should lead the battle, and the army that actually participated in the battle were all of 7,000 people. So now we begin Pasuk Tezayin, okay? So they headed out. The army, we saw it was, how many people did we say it was? Not many people. 232 of these youths, heading an army of 7,000 soldiers, and Achav is commanding the army. So they headed out in the afternoon. At that time, Ben-Hadad was drunk in the huts that they had, in the sukkahs that they had outside of Shomron in the siege. Who of Amalachim? He and the other kings who were with him. Shloshim u'shnayim melech oizer oizer. They had 32 kings assisting him. Vayitzu na'arei soyam dinois barishayim. So this group of 232 of these youths headed out first. So all of a sudden, now they're talking about an army of multitudes and multitudes. They're sitting outside of Shomron and they see a group of 232 people heading out. So Vayishlach Ben-Hadad, so Ben-Hadad sent to find out what's going on. Vayagidu Leilemar, and they told him that Anashim Yatsu Mishomron, there are people heading out of Shomron. So this was like a little bit Mishtaher. An army coming to fight would be a much greater number. A delegation coming to negotiate would be a smaller number. Not so clear. So he says, Vayomer. He said, Im l'shalom yatsu, if they're coming out for peaceful purposes, Tipsum chayim. Catch them alive. Capture them alive. And if they're coming out to do battle, chayim tipsum. Then while they're alive, catch them. So if they're coming for peaceful purposes, catch them alive. If they're coming to do battle, then while they're alive, catch them. What's going on here? So you know, first of all, Rav Moshe David Bali says, all the Mefarshim give different takes on this. Rav Moshe David Bali says, 1 minute, look up Pasuk earlier. He was stone drunk. So what he said makes perfect sense. Yeah, that's Rav Moshe David Bali. He says, I don't know why everybody's looking for Pshatim here. That's what was going on. But the Mefarshim do say Pshatim. The Malbim says, different Mefarshim say different things. The Malbim says that he was emphasizing the bigger chiddush in each case, meaning if they're coming out for peace, it won't be a problem to get them alive, but I want you to capture them. I don't want them going back home. Okay? So he's stressing first, I want you to capture them. If they're coming for war, then the chiddush is keep them alive. So that's why the first time he says, even if they're coming for peace, I still want you to take them prisoner. Okay. The second time he's saying, even if they're coming for war, I want you to keep them alive. That's what's being stressed each time. Now, the Radab just adds that this is also an expression of his absolute confidence, meaning he's not even like considering that there's going to be a struggle here. Just take them alive. Ve'eila yotsu min ha'ir. So, these people came out of the city. Narei soeham dinos. These youths, right? The youths of the ministers. Again, the explanation, whatever. That will mean what it will mean. And the army that they were leading, the 7,000. Meaning, what happened was, first only the 232 youths came out, and then Ben-Hadad sent his soldiers to go take them prisoner, right? And then as his soldiers were approaching, the other 7,000 came out. So each of these people, as someone came forward to take him prisoner, each of these men smote the fellow coming toward him. And all of a sudden Aram started fleeing. This was once again Hashem putting the fear into their hearts. They were a much greater army. And Israel pursued them. And Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram, ran away on a horse with a couple of riders with him. And Acham, the king of Israel, came out to pursue them. And he smote the horses and the chariots. And he smote Aram a very great defeat. So he won the battle. What's that? To catch the riders. That's all. So yes, he had this miraculous victory. Again, we saw that we were talking about multitudes. He came out commanding a very small army, following exactly the instructions of the Navi, and he won. Vayigash ha-Navi al-Melech Yisrael. So now the Navi, this is Michoyhu ben Yimla, came to Melech Yisrael, came to Achav, Vayir Melech. He said, Lech Hizchazek. Now don't sit back now. Don't sit back now. Lech Hizchazek. Go strengthen yourself. And plan your steps carefully. Why? Because this is not the end of the story. Because at this time of year, next year, Melech Aram Oile Olecha, the king of Aram will be coming up against you again. So, don't sit back. Be ready. And the Mefarshim add, Radak, and the Shetavit Valley adds this. Hashem did this to show himself to you. But at this point, the question is, again, this was after Har HaKarmel, right? After Achav responded right to Har HaKarmel, after he also responded right to the challenge of Ben-Hadad, where Ben-Hadad was saying, you have to let me violate your Sefer Torah, and he responded no. So, Hashem said, that's why I gave you this victory, but I want to see if it's going to hold out. I want to see if your good state that you're in now is going to hold out. And therefore, I'm letting you know now that I'm going to be sending Ben-Hadad against you again in a year from now. So make sure that you're going to be holding on to the zchusim that you'll need in order to stand against it. Okay. The Avdei Melech Aram Amruelo. So indeed, the servants of the king of Aram, he made his narrow escape. And now they say to him, okay, how do we, let's analyze the defeat. Let's analyze the defeat. So they told him as follows. Elehei Harim, Elekeh. Their Hashem is a god of mountains. That's where he's powerful, right? This is very much in line with the whole way of thinking of Avodah Zarah, that there are different strengths and different properties to different deities. Why mountains? So the Rambam says because Shomron actually was a mountain. So that's where his reign is. Sutta says because he gave the Torah on Hasinai. Apparently this is a god that is associated with mountains. So Al-Kain Chazkumim, that's why they were able to beat us. That's where he's strong. Let's fight them on a plane. And let's see if we don't beat them there. So the Malbim says that they gave him two etzes. They gave him a spiritual etzah. That's the spiritual etzah. You took him on his turf. That's why you lost. You have to take him on where he's not on home territory. Not on the mountain. And now a material etzah. There's another reason why we lost. And here's the material aids. Here is another step that you should take. You came with kings. Right? You came with kings assisting you in this campaign. Send the kings back home. You'll be better off if you have officers rather than kings under you, with you in the war. Why? Because kings are, first of all, they already consider themselves choshev enough. They're not desperate to better their standing in your eyes. They have enough prestige. They're not going to exert themselves too much to prove themselves. Yeah, they all want to win, but it's not like they're all there trying to curry your favor. Take officers, right, put them to the test, and then they'll all be determined to prove themselves and to outdo the other. That'll help. The mission of Izbal, he says that this is also actually a spiritual aid. So get rid of the kings and put officers instead of them was a spiritual aid. And what's that? This will remind you of what the Rambam says, the early idolaters were. He says, when you took on kings, Hashem responded because they're closer to his lead. He's high. You have people of a higher stature. He's going to respond. If you just take officers, it's under his radar. Right? He's not gonna relate to that level. He's not going to relate to that. It just kind of slips under him. And that way, you'll be able to win. It's too low for him to get involved. That was their answer. So now, right? Remember, everybody's familiar with the Rambam that says that was really a mistake of the early idolaters, right? That we're too low for Hashem to really relate to us, so you go to the intermediaries. Okay. And then just put together an army of equal numbers. We don't have to double the army. You follow these two etzes. We don't need to add to the numbers. Just come back, replace the dead with new soldiers. The same amount of horses, same amount of chariots. Then we'll fight them in a plane. And then we'll see if we don't beat them. So he heard, he agreed, and that's what he did. So indeed, the year passed. Vayifkoid ben Hadad es Aram. Ben Hadad rallied Aram together. Vayal afekol amilchama im Yisrael. And he came to Afek to fight Yisrael once again. Uvnei Yisrael haspakdu. So the Bnei Yisrael were counted. This is interesting. The term here is that they had been counted. Haspakdu. They had already been counted. Don't say like now they counted them. The Mepharshim say, all the Mepharshim say, they're a doctor, a dog, that this was exactly the same count as last year. They didn't do another count. They just, everybody came back, and it was exactly the same count, exactly the same people. And Achav didn't want to make any changes, because these are the people that had been designated by the Navi last time. Right? So he just came back exactly with the same people, simply to repeat what had happened last year. Chalkalu, and they equipped themselves. Ha'ilchul ikrasam, and they went toward them. Ha'yachnu b'nei Yisrael negdam tishnei chasita yisrael. And the B'nai Yisrael camped opposite them, like two flocks of goats. Meaning there were two flocks here. There was the youths, remember the youths, the 232. That's one unit of the army, 7,000, same as last year, all of them just a year older. The other unit of the army, they set up separately for whatever reason, these here, facing off against Aram. Aram milu es ha'aretz. And Aram, once again, they came with their great multitudes, like last time, they simply filled the whole land. The Malbim adds that here part of the idea was, last time, if you remember, they hadn't really been facing up against them. They were inside the city, and then they came out of the city to fight them. You couldn't necessarily see exactly what the difference in numbers was. So you might have thought that maybe there was a sensible war going on, right? But now, they came out into the open, and they're standing facing off against Aram, and you saw the very few numbers relatively to Aram. And once again, the Navi came, Yichayhu. And he said to the Melech Yisrael, he said to him, simply understood, repeated twice, just because he said it with extra stress. We'll see some what Chazal say. Koyomar Hashem, this is what Hashem said. Ya'an Asha'omu Aram, because Aram said, Elohei Harim Hashem, Veloy Elohei Amokim Hu. Hashem is the God of mountains, but not the God of the valleys. So once again, I'm going to deliver these great multitudes into your hand. Vidatem ki ani Hashem. You will know that I am Hashem. Now Chazal say that the significance, right, said, Vayomer Melech Yisrael Vayomer. He said to the king of Israel, and he said, so said Hashem. Chazal say that the double Vayomer is signifying that he actually also gave him an instruction, as emerges later. Don't let Ben-Hadad get away. I'm going to give him into your hands in a miraculous way. It's your job to finish the job, to wipe him out. So some of the Farshim should make that point, Tak, and they say the truth is that Achav, we said earlier, right, that Achav would have to come on his own merit. He didn't. That's what the Farshim say. He didn't. But nevertheless, Hashem is saying, once they expressed it that way, I'm going to give you the victory anyways, because at the end of the day, you might not be a very good representative, but you are my representatives, right? They're coming to fight me. So you're all I have, I'm going to give you the victory. Why is this whole story happening with I don't know. In fact, we're going to see soon, the implication is that Aram was actually friendly with Yehuda at the time. I don't know. Okay. Vayachanu eile nechach eile. So they camped opposite each other. Shivat Yamim. For a week, nobody was going to make the first move. Vayihi b'yom ha'shvi. And then on the seventh day, Vatikrav ha'milchama. The battle heated up, came about. Vayaku b'nei Yisrael es Aram. Me'o elef ragvi b'yom echad. And the B'nei Yisrael struck Aram 100,000 soldiers in one day. This is pretty astounding if you remember that we're talking about 7,000 people, right? All of 7,000 people. So, yeah, the Mefarshim note that the numbers here are not natural. This is all part of Hashem again coming in an open way to make the battle very clear.
This man had to personally with his hand. There's no like bomb.
You weren't machine guns, right? Right. Vayanusu anasarim afeka el ha'ir. So the rest of them fled to the city Afeka. Now, here's the point that came up before. This was the city of Yehuda. The Mefarshim deal with that. The Mefarshim struggle with that. 1 minute. They're running away to the city of Yehuda. The Radak says, yeah, apparently they were friendly with, Aram was okay with Yehuda. And they were running away to find shelter in the city of Yehuda.
Not in here.
What's that?
There are several towns by this name. One in Ephraim, in the southern Israel valley. One in Asher, in the plain of Akko. And one opposite Tiberia, on the east side of the Kinneret. The last one is closest to the route Ben Hadad probably took.
Who do they cite that from?
No
one. I hear. Different Mefarshim say different things. Mm-hmm. Radak says what I just said, but yeah, different Mefarshim do say different things. Some of them say that yes, this really was a city that belonged to Israel and it had been back and forth, conquered and reconquered. But people, so they're fleeing to this city, whatever the case is, they're going to get shelter in this city, and it was very important to deal them a devastating blow, to put them out of commission. But Klal Yisrael was not going to be able to chase them into the city. So Hashem took care of that too. This is all part of the point. Hashem is trying to show here that this is me fighting this battle. So they're crossing into the city that the Jews are not going to be able to chase them into. And exactly then, perfect timing, the wall of the city collapsed. The wall of the city collapsed. It collapsed on another 20,000 people who remained. 27,000 people remained. Well, we're talking about a huge wall. Ben-Hadad fled. He wasn't hit by the wall. He came into the city and he hid there. He found himself a hiding place. So they've lost 127,000 soldiers in one day. That's a pretty serious amount, even in terms of modern warfare. And the point is that Hashem is making this demonstration. He wants it to be very clear. This is me fighting this battle. Right? So now, Ben-Hadad is hiding and he's shaking and quaking. His servant said to him, "Hineinu shamanu ki malchei beis Yisrael." The reputation. The kings of Israel have a reputation of being kindly, soft, kindly, merciful. What's that?
Liberal.
So, nasima nasaki mimasi. You know what? It's on target, because what is it? Liberalism is. Where does the whole concept of humaneness come from in the outer world? It comes from the Torah. Just what? After they took it and processed it, they made a mess out of it. What's that?
It's corrupted.
It's corrupted. It's warped. Right? That's really what this is here. Anshei Chesed, Midav Klal Yisrael, just got messed up. So they said, Nasimo Nasakim Bimosneinu, let's put sackcloth around our waists. The Chavalim Bereshenu will tie ropes around our heads. The Netzei al Melech Yisrael will come out looking like defeated prisoners, will show submission. The Netzei al Melech Yisrael, let's go out. Look, you're hiding here. They're going to catch up with you. Let's go out to him. Ulay Yechayes Nafshecha. Maybe he'll keep you alive. I think the Mitzudas says, one of the Mefarshim says that the Chavala Bereshenu was actually showing, they have ropes on their heads. Most of the Mefarshim say it's just the look of a defeated, desperate prisoner. But one of the Mefarshim says that no, tied ropes around their heads, kind of like coming and saying, look, the noose is already here. If you choose to hang us, you'll hang us. Like showing complete submission. Right? Just remember, this is the guy who declared a little earlier that there isn't going to be enough dust and shemrin to support the feet of my soldiers. So they wrapped the sackcloth around their waists, and they tied the ropes around their heads. And they came to Melech Yisrael, not Ben Hadad himself yet, but his close servants. They came to Achon, and they said, Abdecha ben Hadad Omar, your servant ben Hadad has said, right, Techino Navshi, please allow me to live. Bayoimer, and yes, they knew who they were dealing with. Bayoimer, and Achav says, Ha'edenu chai. Is he indeed still alive? Achihu. Why, he's my brother. I love him. We had such a beautiful relationship back in the good days. Okay? V'ha'anashim yinachshu. So they, this was better than they were hoping for, right? This is better than they were hoping for. So, yinachshu, they worked with omens, right? With signs and stuff. They wanted to make sure to lock this in. V'yamaru v'yachlitu. So they made a point of quickly going ahead to perpetuate this. Hamimenu, hamimenu, to see if this was really his intent. Vayemru, so they said, Achicha ben Hadad. So the way the Radak sets this up is like this. They were in the middle of talking. They said, your servant ben Hadad. So as they were talking, he like interrupted them and said, ben Hadad, oh my brother. Head over heels to flatter the guy who's now defeated and begging for his life, right? So they were very quick. And as he's saying that, so they quickly switched their own tones, and they quickly, instead of servants, they say, yeah, that's exactly what we meant. Your brother Ben-Hadad, your good friend, forget the servant part, that was a slip of the tongue. Your brother Ben-Hadad, your good friend, would like to come meet you again, to reminisce a little bit. Okay? Have a good drink, right? And that's what happens, that's exactly what happens. So, Vayemes, he says, Vayu kachu, bring him out to me, we'll farbring a little bit, we'll get together, right? Vayetze, I love Ben-Hadad, so Ben-Hadad came out to him, Vayaleo ha-merkava, he brings him up onto the royal coach. We're colleagues once again, this says. Vayemes, I love. So Ben-Hadad says to him, he's like gingerly testing the water, right? The first thing is, come, I'm going to be your slave, you keep me alive. Now, his footing is already, Achav offers him this footing, right? We're good pals. We're good pals, so oh, maybe I can actually even stay a king. Okay, so he's navigating this right, Ben-Hadad, right? He goes and he says, now, from a guy begging for his life, he says, Ha'orim ha-shalokach avim e'savicha ashiv. He's the king of Aram again, right? He says, look what I'm going to do for you. You're such a nice guy, Achav. The cities that my father conquered from yours, I'm going to give back. And in fact, set up marketplaces in Damascus, that's the capital of Aram. Set up marketplaces there for you to collect taxes from.
Because he had to schlep to Aram to set up a business. Usually tribute is sent from the nation
To the no, so I think that here it's actually a point of saying, I'm going to give you a hands-on control. This was a submissive statement. The Mepharshim do seem to take this as he's not yet completely back to his cocky self. Okay? But step by step, he's seeing that he can slowly start climbing back up onto his throne, right? But he's saying, yeah, you know, I'm going to give you hands-on control in Damascus. What's that? Oh, so either the pshat is that was a given and he's adding this, or maybe like the Rambam is saying, he's already even kind of trying to get out of that. You'll have a marketplace or two, you'll get your taxes. Isn't that nice of me? Right? He's saying in his stylish sackcloth. So, you'll set up marketplaces in Damascus, just like my father did in Shomron. There's already an ongoing relationship, this whole business, right? Vani, so Achav responds and says, fine, that's satisfactory for me. Vani, Babrisa Shalcheko, I'll send you off with this covenant, we'll make this covenant. Ayichas loy bris, and they made Taka a covenant, right? This guy has no bargaining power. But Achav makes a treaty with him, Ayishlochev. And he sends him off back home.
Why didn't the soldiers of Achav rebel against him at this point? I mean, you sent everybody to risk their lives and then...
Well, he's beaten. He's beaten. They're going to be a vassal state now. Who said we have to wipe them out?
Not for Nishma Hashem, they would have slaughtered all of them.
So obviously, this is certainly... What's that? So as I had that thought also, Achav is, right, we've already been seeing now that Achav, the predominant figure that keeps coming out is the wishy-washy, spineless.
He wants to please everybody.
That's not much what I was thinking. Once you're talking nice to me, he turns, what's the word? What's that? Yeah, so now though, you know, I don't want to let him down. I don't want him to think that I'm not a nice guy. I don't want... Okay, so here we have Achav. Now, he's definitely going to be criticized for this. Not some criticized for this, but punished for this. And we come back to either it's like Chazal said that we saw earlier from Chazal, that he was actually told explicitly earlier by the Navi, don't let him live, right? But even if not, the Mefarshim say that what happened here was terrible, because this is a guy, to give him a chance to get back on his feet, he's going to be coming back again. That's what's going to happen. He's going to be coming back again. So it's like the Mefarshim say, Rachamei Rishonim Achazari. Right? On the spot now, he feels bad for him, whatever, he wants to please him. But really what he's doing now is going in and endangering his whole nation. Let's contrast this with David HaMelech, right? There's psukim back in Shmuel that are even uncomfortable to learn when it describes David's treatment of the conquered nations. Right? And he looked at it and he said, why did David have to do that? The Chevel HaHamis is at least a straightforward execution, right? But then you remember the other psukim with Moav?
The horses running over the soldiers.
And the Gera, look the way he puts them through.
He delies the soldiers down from Moav, and then he runs his horses over them.
That I don't remember. I'm talking about where he passed them through the Megera, like where he chopped them up.
I don't remember that one.
Okay, we're all remembering that? Oh, so that's what Gilman mentioned. I think that's at least a straightforward execution, you know. But there are places where it indicates that Imam Mishlaif, he that you're right, that's what I was referring to. And Jonathan's referring to a case where he ran horses over them. So you think to yourself, okay, you want to kill them, why that? But David had his priorities very clear. Rachamim has its place, but his duty is ensuring the security of the Jewish people. How is he ensuring the security of the Jewish people? By doing it this way rather than just chopping off their head. Because part of what he needs to do is instill fear in the surrounding nations. That's what he sees as the chesed. This is an act of chesed. This is an act of care for the people he's entrusted with. Right? This is his gentleness and his softness with the babies of Kal Yisrael.
Why then later on, like I think it was Jehoash, Yoshiah was punished because he ran them off the cliff? Because later on in Lachem Beis.
If it's later on, you can't hold me accountable. It could be each circumstance has its thing. Whatever it is, we're seeing the contrast here between the kind Achav and the cruel David. Right? Who's going to be kind to the enemy and endanger his nation. Then you have David, who's going to be extra cruel to the enemy because his divine charge is to care for the children of Klal Yisrael. That's how he's caring for them.
It's especially bad because Ben-Hadad came on completely unprovoked in the most aggressive way.
That's right.
The whole way this started, there's no, you know, Bayar Benachal going on here. It's
That's
literally
right.
Just like, I want your wives and everything. And, you know,
that's on. Right. That's right. Making it very clear what his intents were. That's right.
Also, what would really start this trend of the Melech to die?
What's that?
Didn't Avraham Avinu start this?
Now, Melech Tzedayim wasn't the danger to him.
Melech
Tzedayim wasn't an enemy to get rid of this person. But Moshe Tzedvali adds another aspect to this, and that is that Achav, we already saw before, right? I said earlier how you might be a lousy representative, Hashem tells him, but Lamaisa, you're representing me, so I'm going to give you victory. Mm-hmm. Ben-Hadad came and declared war not just on the Jewish people, but very specifically the Torah. He was after the Torah. Right? So Hashem says, I put you into the role of representing my battle against my enemies. What right do you have to come now and be magnanimous? If I put you into the role, and I'm giving you the privilege of representing me in this way, you should be zealous for me now, and not let the man who blasphemed in that way be able to live. So the failure here was both on the level of the Ben Adam Lamakom aspect, of the job that Hashem gave him here, and also in terms of his responsibility towards his people. So this is Mamish, right? It's like we said, liberalism, a misplaced sense of the Jewish need of chesed and rachamim. Right. Okay. So now, the retribution comes. V'ish echad mibnei ha-nevim omar el re'ehu. So, one of the Nevi'im, one of the those studying the yeshivas of Nevi'im said to his fellow, "Bidvar Hashem hakenina, by the word of Hashem, deal me a blow." This was Michael. Michael keeps being the Navi dealing with Achav. Okay, so he says, "By the word of Hashem, deal me a blow." In other words, he's coming, he's telling him, "I got a nevuah that you are supposed to deal me a blow." The man refused. So, if you are perceptive, you'll note that this is basically what happened just now, right? Hashem sent the word to Achav saying, "Deal this nation a blow, right? Smite them." And Achav refused because he was a nice guy, friendly guy, whatever it is. And that's what happened here. Michael was a tzaddik. This man didn't want to smite a tzaddik, even though he was instructed by Hashem to do it. Michael. The word Hashem says to. Right? This is Dvar Hashem. Tell him, Dvar Hashem, I can't, you know. Word of Hashem. Right? The word of Hashem.
Right?
No. Deal me a blow. We'll see soon. Deal me a blow. That's all. Okay? There was a reason for this. And the man refused. So he said to him, Ya'ana shelo shamata b'kol Hashem, because you refused to listen to the word of Hashem, hilchoholech me'iti, you're going to go away from me, v'hikcho ha'aryeh, and you're going to be smote by a lion. The truth is that a person who doesn't, who defies the word of a Navi, it's misbidei shamayim. That's the halacha.
Is it Talmud Navi or is it regular Jew?
Today, you were told by, let's say, the Gogol Hador, you go to visit and he tell you, hit me. Did you listen?
But again, we're talking Nevuah. We're talking Nevuah. Nevuah, it just doesn't work that way. Chiyuv, right? If someone tells you, go and cut a piece of flesh off an eight-day-old baby, would you listen? That's what happened here, right?
The other guy was a Navi?
I don't know. It says Re'ehu. Is it chat that he was also a Navi? I don't know. Vayem Eloi. So, it's, okay. Vayelich Me'etzloi, and he went from him, Vayim Tzu'ehu Ha'ayeh, and Taked the lion, counted him, Vayakehu, and killed him. Vayim Tzu'isha Acher. So then he found another person.
Is there importance to the Hay idea of Ayeh here? Like, sounds like there was like some argument from Shishi's Migrations or something. Like, I don't know.
I imagine if you look enough, you'll find someone who will address it. I don't know. Vayim tzai isha aches. Then he came across another person. Vayena said, "Hakeinina, smite me." Vayakeo ish hakeo patzaya. So this one, who wounded him, he gave him a good gizum to blow, made him bleed. This is again really bringing out the same point. Yeah, yes, there are things that we should not be doing, and there are things that we should naturally be repulsed by, but when Hashem demands it of you, you do it anyways, right? This really is the point, that when we talk about a good midah, there's not really, there's no such thing as a good midah and a bad midah. We're good midah and bad midah, both misnomers. When we talk about a good midah, we mean it's a midah that's meant to be used 95% of the time. Bad midah is a midah that's only meant to be used a small percentage of the time. But what does the word midah mean? It's a measure. A measure, right? A midah is how much. The question is always how much, right? Every midah is good if it's used the right way. Now, rachamim is a good midah because 95% of the time that's the midah you're supposed to be using. 98% of the time, right? But the aside here is that you cannot be controlled by even your goodness. When you're controlled by a midah, all midahs are bad. Now, it's certainly better to suffer from the bad midah of rachamim than the bad midah of cruelty. Certainly better. It's certainly better to have Jewish sins than Nazi sins. Right? Certainly better. person gets credit for his sins also if they're in the right place. You get punished, no doubt about it. But the fact that the sins reflect who you are is also something to take into account. But even the good midas that we have to be in our control. This is how my Rebbe explained. He said, Rambam says that we're supposed to be in the middle path when it comes to midas. Right, that's something that always needs to be emphasized. People misquote this Rambam. One of the worst of many misquotes from the Rambam. When people talk about the Rambam holding in the middle path, everything about Avodas Hashem is supposed to be in the middle path. Right? So it's just a misquote. There's no such thing as Ava in the middle path. Right? Love is by definition extreme. But whatever it is, it's a misquote because it's talking about Midas. Whatever it is, it says the Midas is supposed to be in the middle path. So I gotta ask, what does that mean? It means that 50%, right? Middle path means 50%, right? So that should mean that you give out half of your money, right? One time a person comes to ask you for money, you give. The next time, not, right? When you talk about, is the right thing to respond sharply or to respond softly? One time sharp, one time soft. Make sure to keep it 50-50. So obviously the middle path doesn't mean 50-50. So here's how I was mekabelet. Middle path means midas are pulling you. Your natural midas pull you in different places, right? These are traits, instincts. They pull you in different places. You have to be, even when we're talking about a midah like rachamim and avzarius, you have to be right in the middle between the two, not pulled in either direction, and you decide, now am I going to dip this way or am I going to dip that way? Maintain the perfect balance. I'm not drawn, I'm not pulled in either direction because my midas are not meant to control me. This is the profundity of mitzvahs like Mechias HaMolek. Mechias HaMolek is a very, very fundamental mitzvah. Why? Because it's bringing out this point. Mechias HaMolek is meant to be something that goes against the nature of a Jew, right? Just go and kill a person who's not threatening you. A child, because he's a Amalek, it should go against the nature of a Jew. But that's exactly the point. The point is that Hashem is telling you, you have to be ready at any given time, on my word, to be able to overcome even your good midas and employ the midas you would never want to use. So this is the point that's being made here. Even the good midas, don't let them be in a situation where they control you. You have to be in control of all the good midas, of all the midas, and deciding when you're going to implement control.
How do you get to the point where nothing draws you, when you're being drawn by one thing or another?
Oh, so that's a lot of avoida. That's a lot of avoida. Hey, we're talking about a lifetime of avoida in terms of gaining control of our midas. What we really call it is, what this really is about is being mashlit ha-seichel. Everything should be under shulton ha-das. That's our das that controls everything. What is this? What this really is about is a lot of musar, a lot of Torah study, a lot of avodas ha-midas. It's the whole full regimen of avodas ha-musar. There isn't a quick fix to that. Okay, so it says in Gemara that, well, says Rav Yehuda,